Thank you for joining Mechon Hadar's learning of Pirkei Avot in honor of our 10th year celebration.
This week's Dvar Torah is by Dina Weiss.
Perek Bet Mishnayot Gimel through Zion. Mishnah Gimel. Mishnah 3. We're continuing with the statements of Rabbi Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Hevu zihirin barashut. Be very careful, and I would translate this maybe more precisely as be very wary of figures of authority. She'ei mekarvin lo la'adam, ela l'torach atzman. Because the only reason why they become close to another person is for their own needs. Nir'in ke'ohavin b'sha'at hana'atan. They seem like friends at the time when it is beneficial to them. Ve'ein omdin lo la'adam b'sha'at dochko. And they do not stand by a person at the time of his need. Mishnah Dalet. Hu haya omer. He would say, Asei ritzono kirtzonach. Make his will as your will, i.e. make God's will like your will. Kidei sheya'ase ritzonach kirtzono. So that he will do your will as his will. Batel ritzonach mipnei ritzono. Nullify your own will before God's will. Kidei sheyevatel ritzon acherim mipnei ritzonach. So that God will nullify the will of others before your own will. And here we have Rabbi Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, contrasting, in some sense, God's rashut, God's power, to human rashut. The people who are in charge on the human side cannot be trusted. They will not stand by a person in the time of their need. Whereas God, if you are submissive to God and you do God's will as your own, God will make sure to take care of you. God can do your will as God's own. God will be there for you in a way that human rulers will not be. I would also like to advance a hyperliteral reading of this Mishnah, which some of you may remember from the second Tefillah Toolkit about the Bracha of Ritzei, that if we read this Mishnah hyperliterally, if I nullify my will before God's will, if I exchange my will for God's, then actually my will and God's will become identical. And this isn't Rabbi Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's attempt at manipulating God's power for his own designs. Rather, it's a way of saying you shouldn't be in a situation where you're trying to get other people to do your will. If you really want your will to be done, the best way is to align yourself with what's right. The best way is to align yourself with God's will. And then when things follow the proper course, you will feel that your will is being fulfilled. Now, in the middle of this Mishnah, we change speakers, and Hillel pipes up. Hillel Omer, Hillel says, Al tifrosh men hatzibor, do not separate yourself from the community, ve'al ta'amein ba'atzmach ad yom motach, and do not believe in yourself until the day that you die. Ve'al tadin et chaverach ad shetagia limkomo, and do not judge your friend until you are in your friend's place. Ve'al tomar davar she'i efshar lishmoa, and do not say something that cannot be heard. Shesofo lihishamea, for it will be heard in the end. There are two ways of understanding what a davar she'i efshar lishmoa is. One is something that you do not want other people to hear. And then when Hillel says, Sofo lihi shamea, he's essentially saying, there is no such thing as a secret. The walls have ears. If you really want something to never be heard, do not let it escape your lips. The other understanding is, a davar she'i afshar lishmoa, a word or matter that cannot be heard, actually refers to shmi'a, listening, as understanding. And therefore it says, do not say something that is impossible to understand, for in the end it will be understood. And in this sense, it's a kind of threat, telling someone not to be vague in the way that they speak, because they're trying to conceal their true meaning, because the person who hears it will make meaning out of it, will figure out what it means. And only if you're clear can you be sure that your listeners, the people who are learning from you, will actually take your message with them. As opposed to placing their ideas in your words, their words into your mouth. Ve'al tomar, and do not say, L'cheshe'af pane eshne, when I have time I will learn. Shema lo tipane, maybe you will not have time. Literally, panoi means free, right? To do not say that I will study when I am free, when I have a vacancy, because you never know, you may not have that free time. Mishnah Hey. Mishnah 5. Hu haya omer. He would say, Ein bor yirei chet. A boor, which is best translated as a boor, does not fear sin. Velo am haaretz chasid. And an ignorant person cannot be pious. Velo habayishan lamed. And a person who is chronically embarrassed cannot learn. Velo hakapadan milamed. And a person who gets angry very easily cannot teach. The simplest understanding of this idea that a person who is easily embarrassed cannot learn is that learning involves a lot of vulnerability. It involves being willing to admit that you do not know. And so someone who is overly embarrassed, someone who's not willing to say, I do not know, will never actually get the learning that they require. And similarly, the teacher who doesn't have the patience, the teacher who gets overly angry, the teacher who gets frustrated, will not have the forbearance to help the person who needs to learn really understand to the fullest extent. And in my experience as a teacher, the more a teacher is a kapdan, the more a teacher gets easily angry, the more they actually produce baishanim. They produce people that are afraid to ask. They produce people that are embarrassed about what they do not know. We continue. Velo kol amarbe bischora machkim, and people who do a lot of business do not necessarily become wise. Uvim kom she'ein anashim, and in a place where there are no men, there are no menches, hishtadel niyot ish, you should strive to be a man. Essentially saying that when you see a gap, when you say, why isn't anybody taking care of this? You should be speaking to yourself and say, oh, then I will take care of this. Mishnah Vav, Mishnah 6. Af hu ra'a gulgolet achat shatzafa al pnei hamayim. Even he too, saw a skull that was floating on top of the water. Amar la, he said to it, where he spoke to the skull, al da'ateft atfuch. On account of the fact that you drowned someone else, you were drowned. V'sof metifayech yitufun. And in the end, those who drowned you themselves will be drowned. This Mishnah is strange for a few reasons. One of them is that it describes a story which is not like the didactic statements that are more common in Mishnah Avot. Second, it seems strange to me that Hillel would stop to talk to a skull. And third, it's not clear to me how he knows that this skull belongs to someone who drowned, and the fact that they drowned came as some sort of punishment. Perhaps one way of tapping into the meaning of the story is that when Hillel saw this skull floating on the water, he was moved by this sight. He was disturbed by it. And the way that he was able to move on was by acknowledging this difficult circumstance and creating some narrative that made sense to him in his mind. And this strange story is itself about strange stories. It's about Hillel's attempt to create some sort of meaning, some sort of justice out of a scene about which he has not enough information. Mishnah Zion, Mishnah 7. Hu haya omer. He would say, this Mishnah is along the lines of the Torah's prohibition on the king to have too many wives and too many horses, that there's some risk in material wealth that is not present in spiritual possessions. So Hillel said, Marbe basar, if you have a lot of meat, marbe rima, you are likely to have a lot of spoiling, a lot of worms. Marbe nechasim, if you have a lot of money, if you have a lot of property, marbe da'aga, it increases one's worries. This is the original source of mo money, mo problems. Marbe nashim, you increase the number of wives. Marbe kishafim, you increase the amount of witchcraft. The association of women with witchcraft is long-standing. It's possible to look at the association of women with witchcraft as just a misogynistic view that women can't be trusted, women are crafty and shifty. But one way of seeing it is that it's a recognition of women's status as marginal in society, and magic is often the provision of people whose status in society is marginal. Marbe shevachot, if you have a lot of female slaves, marbe zima, you are likely to increase sexual impropriety, perhaps your own sexual impropriety in sleeping with your own female slaves. Marbe avadim, if you have a lot of slaves, marbe gazel, you increase the likelihood of theft. Marbe Torah, however, when you increase the amount of Torah that you have, marbe chayim, you increase life. Marbe yeshiva, if you increase the amount of time you sit, presumably in study. Marbe chokhmah, you increase wisdom. Marbe etza, you increase the amount of time, the amount of investment you put in to asking advice of other people. Marbe tvuna, you increase understanding. Marbe tzedakah, when you increase charity and righteousness. Marbe shalom, you increase peace. Kana shem tov, when he creates or acquires a good reputation. Kana latzmo, he acquires it for himself. Kana lo divrei Torah, when he acquires for himself the words of Torah. Kana lo chayei haolam haba, he acquires for himself the life of the world to come. At the end of Mishnah Hay, at the end of the fifth Mishnah of this chapter, we learn that someone who is embarrassed cannot learn. We learn that someone who is angry or quick to anger cannot teach. And that not everyone who engages in a lot of trade becomes wise. And there's something very strange about velo kol harmarbe bischora machim, that not everyone who engages in trade becomes wise. Because that implies that most people who engage in trade become wise, but some people do not. If the Mishnah had wanted to say, watch out, don't engage in business, it should have said, velo hamarbe bischora machim, the person who engages in commerce will not become wise. But instead it says, velo kol hamarbe bischora machim, not everyone who engages in commerce becomes wise, implying that most people who engage in commerce do become wise. And I'd like to suggest here that based on the context, the schora that we're talking about might not be physical, material commerce, but might actually refer to the Torah itself, which is often referred to as merchandise or as wealth. Like in Psalm 119, verse 162, Sas anochi al imratecha kimotzei shalal ra. I rejoice over your statements like someone who finds great spoil, like someone who discovers a lot of money. And one of the most famous psukim that talks about the Torah is also read as the rabbis as describing the Torah as a kind of merchandise. In the fourth chapter of Mishle, Pasuk Bet, the second verse, it says, Ki lekach tov natati lachem, for I have given you a great taking, Torati al ta'azovu, do not abandon my Torah. And this lekach, this taking, can be understood abstractly. A lekach is a term that we often use for a moral lesson. It's the takeaway from a story, it's the takeaway from a teaching. But the Midrash Tanhuma reads lekach here, this taking, as something that you would take in a business transaction. as the take, the spoils, what you get when you trade. And the Midrash Tanhuma talks about the difference between Torah as a type of merchandise and every other type of physical merchandise. It describes two merchants, one of whom trades in silk and the other one trades in spices. When they engage in trade, when they barter the silk for the spices, the person who once had the silk now has the spices, but has lost the silk. And the person who had the spices has gained the silk, but no longer has his spices. And the Midrash contrasts this type of exchange, this type of commerce, with studying Torah. Because if I have two Mishnayot, and I teach you two Mishnayot, we don't each end up with two Mishnayot, we each end up with four. And Torah is the kind of merchandise where the more you give, the more you get. And you don't lose from teaching. In fact, you gain from teaching. You're able to understand more, and you never lose by giving it away. To bring it back to our Mishnah, where we say, Lo kol hamarbeh bischora machkim, that not everyone who engages in commerce becomes wise. Perhaps what the Mishnah is saying is that not everyone who learns the Torah, not everyone who engages in the trade of studying Torah, themselves become wise. One reason for this might be that if you treat Torah like a schora, if you treat Torah like a type of merchandise, like a type of wealth that you need to hoard, you will never have the advantage of understanding something better because you've taught it, of caring more about it because you've had the opportunity to share it. And another understanding of this, perhaps the harder interpretation to absorb, but maybe the one that's even more important for us to understand, is that Torah doesn't always make us wise. Learning Torah doesn't always do what we hope that it does. If you are hoarding the Torah because you want to become more wise, because you want to be known as a Torah scholar, and all you care about is learning the Torah, you might not become a different person. You might not become a wiser person. You might not be a person of greater sensitivity, a person of greater clarity. You have to be open to what the Torah teaches you. You have to try to be a student of the Torah. And in that way, holding on to this merchandise will indeed make you wise. Next week's Mishnayot are Chapter 2, Mishnayot Chet through Tet, 8 through 9.
For more opportunities to be involved in our 10th year celebration, please visit mechonhadar.org/siyum, join us on Thursday, March 2nd for our Siyum celebration, and be a part of our first ever National Shabbaton for March 3rd through 5th, 2017.